WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports on this fantastic Tuesday, August 18th, 2015. I am your host, Al Martin, and we have a sizzling hot show in store for all of you. On today's show, I will invite current sports radio contributor, as well as motivational speaker, author, and now semifinalist in the Toastmasters World Championship Speech Contest. That's right. You know who I'm talking about. DeAndre Carter. DeAndre Carter is fresh off of that Las Vegas trip, and we'll talk about the competition that led him all the way to just, it could have been competing for a world championship. He was actually two speeches away from competing in the world championship for all the marbles. He'll talk about that incredible ride. You do not want to miss that chat. We'll also, of course, dive into the Northwestern Athletic Unionization talk that was ideally blocked by the National Labor Relations Board yesterday in their ruling. And we'll finally get to that football chatter concerning an NFL team in Los Angeles. And we'll wrap things up with Top 5 Tuesday. Who exactly are the top 5 quarterbacks in the NFL today? What do you think? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this August 18th. Michigan State football fans of all ages are invited to attend the 13th annual Meet the Spartans presented by Pepsi today from 5 to 8 p.m. in Spartan Stadium. Ninth-year Michigan State head coach Mark D'Antonio and members of the 2015 football team will be available for autographs on the concourse inside of the stadium. Parking is free and the stadium gates open at 4:30 p.m. Admission is totally free as well. The format is similar to last year, as offensive players will be available for autographs from approximately 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. and defensive players from approximately 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. D'Antonio will be available for autographs from 5:30 to 7:30. Autograph stations will be positioned on the north, east, and west concourses inside of Spartan Stadium. That should be a fun time. Former Spartan Adrian Payne of the Minnesota Timberwolves is looking forward to hosting his second annual youth camp in East Lansing. The three-day camp kicks off on Monday, August 24th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day at the East Lansing Hanna Community Center. Adrian will be fully involved and will interact with campers. The basketball camp gives local youth the opportunity to meet, learn from, and get to know Payne. Boys and girls ages 5 to 14 of all skill levels will be in attendance. In addition to basketball and athletic skills, campers will receive valuable life lesson tips to help them achieve success in every area of their lives. Parents should visit isgcamps.com to register for more information. And we will have Adrian Payne right here live on our airwaves this Friday at 1:30 p.m. to talk about the camp and so much more. The National Labor Relations Board on Monday declined to assert jurisdiction in the historic Northwestern University case after football players had been deemed to be employees by the regional NLRB director last year. Effectively, the decision is a majority victory for Northwestern and the NCAA. Analysis expected the five-member NLRB to either back or reverse the decision, but instead, the board exercised its discretion not to take charge of the case and dismissed the representation petition filed by the College Athletes Players Association, which had worked with then-quarterback Kane Coulter and the Wildcats football team. A game used basketball from the gold medal game at Barcelona Olympics in 1992, signed by 11 members of the Dream Team and coach Chuck Daly, is the centerpiece of a current auction of the former Detroit Pistons coach's memorabilia at SCP Auctions. A few of the items are Detroit-oriented. Others include the late Daly's Dream Team warm-up clothes, a basketball signed by Daly and other big-name NBA and college coaches, including Tom Izzo, Larry Brown, Dean Smith, Coach K, Lenny Wilkins, and others, autographed jerseys from Pistons former Pistons player Grant Hill and Detroit Red Wings player Steve Yzerman, and various items of correspondence, including a thank you note from Isaiah Thomas. Wow, all those are, I'm sure, are going to be going for big money. The Detroit Tigers begin a two-game road series against the Chicago Cubs tonight at 8:10 p.m. The team is currently five games in back of a wild card berth. Tigers right-hander Anibal Sanchez enters his this start tied for the major league lead with 28 home runs allowed. Ugh, he's close to becoming the fifth Tigers pitcher in the Comerica Park era to allow 30 homers in a season. New York Yankees pitcher C.C. Sabathia was involved in a street fight earlier Saturday morning in Toronto following the team's 4-3 win over the Blue Jays. TMZ first reported that on Monday. The 6'7" left-hander exchanged words with hecklers and was subsequently ushered away from the scene when a friend pushed him into a cab. Sabathia was scheduled to pitch Monday night against the Minnesota Twins, but New York announced that his start will be pushed back until today. Sabathia said the change had nothing to do with the fight, and he knew about the decision 2 days ago. The Arizona Cardinals and free agent running back Chris Johnson agreed on Monday to a one-year deal. The deal is for $870,000 with no signing bonus. And John Stewart is getting back into the ring in his first major gig since leaving The Daily Show on August 6th after a 16-year run. Stewart has signed on to be the host of the WWE SummerSlam this Sunday. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, if anything is on your sports noggin that you need to get off your chest. Without further ado, it's about that time to start the show.
To what is being called a big win for college athletes. A National Labor Relations official ruled Wednesday that football players at Northwestern University are employees of the school and can form a union. The decision could have a ripple effect for colleges nationwide. Northwestern quarterback Kane Coulter started the drive to organize his teammates.
It's a huge step on our journey to gaining basic protections and basic rights. We finally have somebody in place to negotiate on our behalf and to make sure that our experience is the best that it can be, and somebody actually looking out for the players and only for the players.
Well, I think short term, Charlie, we're going to be headed into the NLRB's national office in Washington, where a five-member panel is going to take this up in the coming months. Northwestern is certainly going to appeal this case in that respect, and don't be surprised if the NCAA doesn't go to court. This is a potentially staggering effect. And I think the other thing that's really interesting here is this is yet another drumbeat about just how big college athletics is right now.
Welcome to the show. I'm excited. Not only is it a beautiful day outside, the birds are chirping, the sun is out. I do think we were expected to have rain later on, though, but still a gorgeous day. Anytime, like my grandfather used to say, anytime you wake up and you have breath, it's a day to rejoice and put on a smile, okay? But welcome to Current Sports, folks. My name is Al Martin. It always has been. And we've got a great show in store for you, as you just heard. That actually was a report from when news was first released about Northwestern athletes being granted the ability to form a union. Now, that, of course, had to go through a few approvals, and the biggest one being, of course, with the National Labor Relations Board, you know, having to really approve things to assign jurisdiction that Northwestern Athletics and Northwestern athletes can unionize. But that hit a bit of a snag yesterday in a really surprising decision that, in my eyes, you know, amounts to punting the case away and basically saying, hey, we're letting someone else deal with this problem. Problem in quotation marks, if you ask me. And basically putting, you know, putting this out of their hands. The NLRB decided to ideally side with the NCAA by refusing to grant the Northwestern athletes the right to unionize. So, you know, where is this going to go now? Well, probably going to go to federal court, to be honest. You know, and this is going to be a rallying cry for, because I really think this is bigger than Northwestern, and they certainly know that. I mean, when Kane Coulter, you know, brought this to the table and decided to rally the troops and really to fight this, you know, fight for their rights as athletes at a university like Northwestern, they knew, you know, what the big picture was here, that they were not just representing athletes at Northwestern, but they were representing college athletes as a whole. And I want to first clear up something that I believe many people believe when looking at this story initially, and that is concerning college athletes getting some sort of compensation or getting paid, and that being the premise as to why Kane Coulter and his fellow teammates, you know, because he was quarterback at Northwestern, his fellow teammates and the athletes at Northwestern wanted to push this through. And he said this repeatedly. It was not fighting for the right for college athletes to get paid. That's not what why Kane Coulter and his teammates decided to do this. This was about unionizing. And what does unionizing mean at the end of the day? It means having representation and protection as an athlete, folks. That's what they were fighting for. I remember when this thing first came out, I mean, I remember Kane Coulter talked about, you know, how certain athletes who play college athletics, you know, have to come out of pocket to pay their own medical bills if they are hurt playing the sport that they have a scholarship for, which I think is absolutely crazy. That's one of the premises that he came up with and one of the, you know, the centers of the conversation as to why they were fighting to unionize. Medical bills should be taken care of if an athlete is injured at a respective university. Also, to make sure that their workload is not overbearing, because at the end of the day, they're supposed to be student athletes, right? Now, let's be real here. We love to keep it real on this show. I always keep it 100. And to be honest, especially when talking about Division I college football players, student athlete is more like athlete student. Because if you look at the amount of hours these kids put in, you know, and the amount of dedication that it takes. I mean, and I went to Michigan State, and I would see certain athletes, you know, barely show up to class and be drained if they did, especially during the college football year. I can only imagine what it is like being a Division I college football player or college basketball player playing for a big-time university, dedicating all that time in the weight room, in practice, with your teammates, watching film. I mean, where do you fit in studying throughout that whole thing? So, you know, I totally get where Kane Coulter and the Northwestern athletes were coming from in this, because they wanted representation. They wanted somebody to back them up to make sure that their overall well-being at a university was going to be A1. But the NLRB, again, this decision not to even deal with this case, it was they're punting it away. You know, like I said, I mean, they're basically saying, all right, we're not going to deal with this. It's quote unquote out of our jurisdiction. And hey, go deal with it somewhere else. Go deal with it in federal court somewhere. Okay. Interesting, man, because I do believe I really want to see this push through. I really believe that, you know, athletes should have backing. And, you know, with the workload that they have to go through on top of being a student, having a union to have their back, I don't see what the negatives are. I just don't see it. And the reason why the NCAA is so nervous, you know, about, you know, college athletes having that sort of backing is because of where it could lead to down the road. Would it possibly put money in the pockets of a college football athlete? Because that's the other argument here. That's the trickle-down effect. Again, as I just stated a few moments ago, the initial reason as to why Cam Coulter and the Northwestern athletes decided to push this through is because they want representation and they want protection as an athlete. Point blank, period. But you can't just crack open that door in the NCAA's eyes, because if you do crack open that door, it could possibly lead to dollar signs for these college athletes. And that is why I do believe that the NLRB decided to say, all right, we're not going to deal with this. Take it to court and let them handle it. And at the end of the day, what this all comes down to in my eyes, I don't think that, you know, college athletes can just sit on this. If they want change, if they want to unionize and push this thing through, it's in their hands. They might have to go to extremes. If they're really serious about it, they may even have to go to the extremes of even walking away from the game and possibly going on strike if they really want it that bad. Because in doing that, you force the NCAA's hand in saying, okay, we need to do something about this. Maybe we should grant them a union because they're not taking the football field. But it's going to take an army, not just one or two players, to do that, because you know what the coach is going to do or that university is going to do? They say, all right, whatever. That's one player. Take a scholarship away. He's done. He's not playing for us. It's going to take a mass amount of athletes to do that, to really, you know, get the attention of the NCAA, of the NLRB. And I really think, you know, this is just another hurdle for college athletes to overcome. I want to get your thoughts on it because, you know, there are so many opinions on this story. There are so many different takes on it. And like I always say, there's so many layers to a conversation like this. Call in right now. Our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. 9527. I want to invite the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Welcome to the show, Isaac. How you doing?
Doing well, Al. I want to open up with a quote from the NLRB, the National Board of Labor Relations, about exactly what we're talking about. And that's that players need to do this together, not just one, because this is the quote. Quote, as the NCAA and conference maintained substantial control over individual teams, the board held that asserting jurisdiction over a single team would not promote stability in labor relations across the league. What does that say to me? That says to me, because it's one team, they couldn't rule on this. But if it was a division, a conference, a score of schools that did this, then yes, maybe the National Board of Labor Relations would recognize this, because this is big. And in my opinion, that, like you said, athletes deserve to be paid. They've put so much time in this, and it might require a strike. It might require walking away from the game for a couple of years. But the thing is, when they release this decision, it is sort of a win-win for both sides, because the NCAA, no, Northwestern's players are not recognized as a union, so that's good. But at the same time, the National Board of Labor Relations still deems this as employees. They are employees as student athletes, or athlete students, as you said. So that's a big deal that they're still employees and saying go to court. If this goes to court, I think the players will win, and I'd expect more unions now to pop up.
And going back to that quote, Isaac, the reason why, this is what they harped on when looking at that quote, Isaac. Again, you know, in the decision, the board held that asserting jurisdiction would not promote labor stability due to the nature and structure of the NCAA Division I football subdivision, because Northwestern, folks, is a private institution. Folks, out of the 125 FBS teams, 108 of those teams are state-run colleges and universities. The board does not have jurisdiction over the majority of those schools, which are state-run colleges and universities. Schools like, ideally, a Michigan State. Northwestern is a private institution. And if, let's say, and this is what the board harps on, I'm speaking like I'm from the board now. If the board granted unionization for Northwestern and the other private institutions, guess what? 108 schools can't unionize because they have, the board doesn't have jurisdiction over those schools. So that's why they harped on that. Let's say, you know, Northwestern, along with a few other schools that are state-run colleges, got into this whole fight. Then we might have had a different outcome. And again, it's going to take more than Northwestern here, obviously, because especially with them being a private institution as well. It's going to take the masses in order for this to get done. My question to you, Isaac, because I believe, you heard my stance on this thing, I do believe that college athletes should have a union backing them. The workload is unbelievable, especially when you look at Division I college athletics, when you look at how much money is dumped. Just take college football, for example. Look at how much money is dumped into college football. And do those players get compensated? Do the players out there get compensated for any of it? No. In the win column, possibly. But that's about it. That is about it. You know, they put in all that time and effort, and to know that they don't have any backing somewhere, I have a problem with that. So I do think they should be unionized. I don't know. What do you think about it?
Oh, I agree 100%. Because, like you said, let's say 85%, or not let's say, 85% of the schools are state schools in the FBS. So let's say Northwestern not only tries to unionize, but let's say USC, let's say Duke, let's say those private schools join in. Then after that, guess how many teams are in the FBS? 108. They just cut those 20 teams because unless there's a mass revolt against this, then those 20 schools really can't make the impact themselves. Everybody needs to do it, which will cause changes in the state legislatures, and then the National Board of Labor Relations might be able to rule on this. So, but to answer your question, yes, I think there needs to be a national union without a doubt. Players work so hard, they deserve to be represented.
The workload, again, I can only imagine what the workload is for a college athlete, for a college football player, the amount of hours they put in. I just, you know, and sometimes I sit back and think about it, you know, when looking at the different practices they have, the different workouts they have throughout an entire, you know, school year. I mean, I may be pulling my hair out if I'm a student athlete, you know, because I just don't see how you can dedicate adequate time to your schoolwork because of the amount of time that you put in athletics. Now, there is the other flip of that coin that says, okay, what about the kid who makes academic All-American, okay? There is that. But that's not the majority of student athletes out there. I tell you what, you know, some of the best college football players out there are dedicating so much time to their craft that they are ideally are putting their books on the back burner. And, you know, that's a whole nother can of worms that also needs to be discussed. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's go to our phone lines right now, actually. On line one, we've got Apachu. Apachu, welcome to Current Sports, my friend.
How you guys doing?
Fantastic, my friend. How about you?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm ready for football.
I know, right?
And that's why I want to thank these young men for making a good part of my life so pleasurable. And I do think they have a right to be represented one way or another. I mean, it's atrocious how they're treated. Yeah, they get a free education and so forth. But before that, I want to say this. I appreciate what you said yesterday involving the concept of the Redskins. I want to thank you, man, for being real. I want to thank you for being honest. But I want to especially thank your superiors for allowing you to speak your mind and speak what you think is the truth. I think it takes a lot of courage on their part as well. And you're big time, man. I really appreciate that. And I appreciate Isaac's comments as well. You guys are as truthful as you can be.
Thank you, Apache.
Appreciate it, man. And I listen to a lot of talk shows, and I like your style, man. Both of you guys.
Thank you, Apache.
Appreciate it.
And the other thing was, I heard that repeat on that speaker that went to Vegas that you had. He gave a presentation last week. I think it was a repeat. I didn't hear the first one. Man, that was incredible. That was incredible. And the thing that stood out was he said, "Wherever you go, your career follows you." You know, and it was just a powerful statement for him to make. And I think he was one of the best presenters you had on your program. And I want to thank him as well. I understand he might be coming on today.
Yes, you talking about DeAndre Carter? Yeah.
Yes.
Yes,
very,
he will be
very
on.
Good.
Yeah, he's
very
great.
Very powerful. Very powerful man. And I think he has a lot to offer people. Shit, he should run for the presidency, man. You know, as independent. You know,
right,
not
right.
Consensus into all these candidates. You know,
I'm telling you.
Anyway. Those guys that made that threat, at least of the union, they had incredible beneficial byproducts, okay, because, you know, you watched The Wizard of Oz, right?
What's that? I'm sorry, Apache.
When you was growing up, you watched The Wizard of Oz, right?
Oh, of course, of course.
Okay, well, that was not written for children. That was disguised in a cartoon-like fashion in order so there wouldn't be repercussions. By the system against the people that wrote it and why they wrote it and so forth. But you got they go see the wizard. They finally get to Oz, and they're in front of this great wizard, and everybody's scared. And the little puppy, the poodle, goes and he pulls the curtains, and you see the wizard. Mm-hmm. And the wizard says, "Don't pay no attention to that man behind the curtain." You know, and this is the NCAA, man. They've been exposed. You know, it's like the king with no clothes. They've been exposed. They have weaknesses. There are some issues there that need to be clarified, identified, and clarified. And these young men have done that. And in the end, it's not even about the union. I think they have been exposed in how they treat these kids. I didn't know about the medical situation. I didn't know that they were given 1 year scholarships each year, which allowed coaches to be, in some cases, abusive or have leverage over kids who were sacrificing their lives physically.
Right.
In order to bring us pleasure, you know. So there's some things that need to be corrected. As far as them getting paid, they should get paid. And it is ridiculous to spend so much time away from class and then to be expected to achieve the same things as other students who don't have to deal with sports. It's incredible. It's incredible stress. I don't know how to do it. But I do want to thank all the athletes for the sacrifice they make, and I hope they do well. But I think the tide has changed. I think the NCAA is not the monster that it once thought it was, and it doesn't look as invincible as it once was. Mm-hmm. You know, I think things are going to change, and I think things are going to change for the better. And it's about time, man, because it's about those kids getting an education, and it's about us getting our pleasure. But the one thing I will say about the NFL, if you go to the NFL, I think you ought to sign a waiver, knowing that you might get brain damage. No, if you sign that waiver, I don't think you should come back on the NFL, even though the NFL for decades kept that a secret.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk about corruption with FIFA and all that. Well, they had the corruption here in the NFL, too, you know, in some of the other programs, NCAA and so forth. But thank you a lot, guys. Wonderful program.
No, thank you. We appreciate the kind words as well, Apache. I mean, Apache was always a fantastic caller of ours and a dedicated listener, and we really appreciate his support and those kind words. And he always makes outstanding points. And you know, it's one of those things that when you look at Isaac, the overall compensation for the student athlete, the conversation that comes in as to, okay, if we do start to compensate college football players at the Division I level, what about the swimmer? What about the softball team? What about the baseball team? Then that's when it really becomes sticky. And that's why this whole cost of attendance conversation is now coming up on. And you know what? It's so refreshing because Mark Hollis, Michigan State Athletic Director, he actually addressed cost of attendance and said in Michigan State's current budget right now, they do have money accounted for if this whole cost of attendance is enacted, where every, you know, college athlete within the Michigan State football program gets a certain amount of money to do what they want with, whether it be get food, you know, whatever, you know, just to live off of. And they already have it accounted for in their budget. And there's multiple universities like Michigan State that have it accounted for in their budget, bracing for this to get pushed through. So, which I think it will. Because, again, Isaac, as a student athlete, you put in so much work, so many hours, so many, you know, film sessions that, and let's keep it real here. When a college athlete, you know, leaves a university, hopefully gets that degree, goes and plays in the pros, and we all know that, you know, the statistics prove this. 80% of athletes who play at the collegiate level do not have an illustrious pro career. So when they leave a university like this and go out there into the workforce, all of those hours of dedication in the film room, on the hardwood, on the gridiron, on the diamond, that sets them back when competing with people like you and I, who currently go to Michigan State, who I went to Michigan State, and I had the luxury of going out there and getting internships and getting the necessary experience at the local TV station and going out and getting a feel for reporting in my respective field. That experience gave me a leg up on the competition when it comes to the workforce. But when 80% of those who play college athletics go out there into the workforce and don't have the internships and that kind of experience, how do we expect them to compete in the work field? That's also another setback in this whole conversation. Is the workload worth it as a human being? Is it worth it? What do you think, man? What do you think on that, Isaac?
Al, I would like to start off with an anecdote, because earlier today I was doing my schedule and my scholarship, thank you to Michigan State University, because it covers my classes, covers my room and board. Really generous. I get a little bit of money, like you said, for expenses. So Michigan State makes it easy on me. And aside from that, I'm here. I work at WKAR. I also worked at facilities. But guess what? That all I need to do for my scholarship is maintain a 3.2 GPA and be a full-time student, which means I live in the area, go to campus, and take 12 hours a semester. I try to do more than that. But these athletes, they have to do so much more than that. They have to be on the team, which is hours of practice every day. I remember in high school doing practice every day. That detracted from my academics, and it made it really hard for me. I mean, imagine being at a college doing that when it's going to be more practice, tougher academics. It's just totally unfair that these players can't get a job, can't get the same opportunities. They deserve to be paid. They deserve to get more than I do, let alone they don't get as much, which is ridiculous. They work their butt off. They deserve to get paid.
Oh, boy. There's so many ways we can take this conversation. What do you think about it? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me if you're shy. At Al Martin, WKAR. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will be chatting with DeAndre Carter, current sports radio contributor, motivational speaker, author, advisor, and semifinalist in the Toastmasters World Championship Speech Contest. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back. You are tuned into Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Isaac, did you see this story? Get away from the heavy conversation we just had in the first break really quickly before we get to our guest. I saw this story and really cracked up about it. It's concerning Matt Barnes, who is an NBA basketball player. Matt Barnes, you know, he's had a pretty good career in the NBA. Had a pretty good career. He's played on some very good teams. But anyway, you know, cut to the chase here. TMZ caught up with Matt, outside, you know, he confronted him with a question. And really, I just thought this was just incredibly just lame. Anytime a guy lies or dances around, when questioning him about, whether or not he's dating someone, his dating life. And Matt Barnes just basically lied to the camera and got called out pretty big by one of the biggest musical voices of our time, that being pop star Rihanna. Matt Barnes was asked, what's up with him and Rihanna? I guess the two have, I don't think they've ever had any interaction with one another. So I don't know where this question came from TMZ, but they asked about, you know, Matt Barnes and Rihanna. And, Matt Barnes went on camera and said that, yeah, we're dating. Well, actually it's kind of more than dating. This could possibly turn into a thing. So as the day goes on, and I actually follow Rihanna on my Instagram, Rihanna goes to Instagram and completely destroys any notion that her and Matt Barnes may be dating. And she riddled it with a lot of hashtags like, I don't even know you, the devil is a liar, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's got to be so embarrassing anytime you lie about dating. This is one of the biggest pop stars of our culture here, and you lie about dating her, and she calls you out on social media, and everyone makes fun of you. I would not want to be Matt Barnes right now, Isaac.
Now, it's one thing for you or I to go and say, hey, I met Rihanna, she smiled at me even. And that's a total lie. That's one thing for you and I to say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But for him to go on camera and say, be questioned, you know, something along the lines of, Matt, where did you guys go for the first date? Man, I'm not trying to get into any specifics, but, you know, we just did a few things. It was, she didn't meet him. Oh, my gosh. I'm beyond words right now. It's such a funny story. I love it.
It is hilarious stuff. And, yeah, if you want to see Rihanna's hit on, Matt, you know, backlash at Matt Barnes, you just go to her Instagram profile. And, again, she really goes in. So I would hate to be Matt Barnes right now. All right, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. All right, and he is on the line with us right now. His name, of course, is DeAndre Carter, Current Sports radio contributor, motivational speaker, author, and semifinalist in the Toastmasters World Championship Speech Contest. Actually, the number one speaker in the competition from the good state of Michigan. DC, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing fantastic, Al. That's an awesome introduction. Can you say that again?
I know, right? Especially that last part, right? Number one speaker in Michigan. That's unbelievable, my man.
Now, you went out
to actually Las Vegas to compete in the semifinals for this world championship. First off, for all of our listeners out there listening that don't know exactly what Toastmasters is all about, can you sort of give us a synopsis real quick, DC?
Absolutely. Toastmasters is a public speaking and leadership development organization. We have hundreds of thousands of members worldwide. We are truly an international organization, and it's founded to help people improve themselves personally and professionally. So I'm very excited to be a part of such a phenomenal group.
Yeah, it's certainly an admirable organization, and it's really cool to see the different participants over time that have really gone on to do some incredible things, including yourself. Now, for you, DC, how did you end up going to Las Vegas? Because I know that competition was pretty stiff here in Michigan.
Absolutely. It's a stiff competition. It starts with 30,000 contestants worldwide. And to use a sports analogy, it's sort of like the NCAA tournament. So you go from a round of 64 to 32, Sweet 16, et cetera. Well, with us, there are six rounds of the Toastmasters International Speech Contest. You start off at your club level, then you advance to the area level, then it's the division level, then it's the district level. All of those four levels, I was able to win first place and advance to the semifinal level, which took me to Vegas, where I was two speeches away from being the world champion of public speaking. And I delivered my first speech, was unable to advance to the final round, but I was able to witness the world stage. And just like Isaiah Thomas watching Larry Bird and Magic play in the finals, I was watching them on the world stage saying, my time will come.
Yes, it certainly will, DC. And a great run this year, And when diving into those specific speeches that you prepared for this competition, what was your speech about that you used for this competition?
The title of my speech was RISE, and I use it as an acronym, RISE. And my purpose was to show the audience how to overcome adversities and challenging times that are called defining moments. So I gave them four simple steps. R, you must remember a time when you were at your best. I, you must inspire yourself to take the next step. S, you must learn to shift your focus upward when life tries to pull you downward. And E, you must expect the best.
Now for you, using that speech, DC, why did you choose to use this speech? And what's the inspiration behind it?
The inspiration is actually interesting. It's a Spartan. Her name is Brittany, and Brittany came to my office as a Kalamazoo scholar, which means her local town was going to pay for a scholarship as long as she kept her grades up. But Brittany was struggling, and her first semester, she was a first-generation college student, which means she's the first person in her family to ever go to a university. It meant that she did not have the emotional or financial support that she needed to tackle this challenge, so she started struggling. She came into my office, and we sat down and created a game plan. And I was able to play a role in helping Brittany find her true inner greatness and elevate her performance, where she went to a 3.6 GPA during that semester. So I was teaching the audience how Brittany was able to rise over the adversity and the challenge.
Wow, that's certainly the type of story that translates pretty easily to a speech. I tell you that, DC. Now,
absolutely.
For you, as you went on in this competition, what adjustments did you make to that speech, knowing that as the competition gets steeper and you advance round by round by round, I mean, you got to come correct, right?
Absolutely, Al, and that was the most eye-opening part for me, because I used the same speech 6 years ago in the exact same Toastmaster contest. I advanced through the first four rounds undefeated, just like I did this time, but the last time, the difference was I was disqualified due to an error by an officer within my club. So I never got a chance to compete at the next level. Mm-hmm. And I felt like the opportunity was taken away. So I came back with the speech. But what was different is each time I tried it, I kept nitpicking, improving. And it sounded like a completely different speech, because the higher levels you go, the more you have to change, the more you have to do things, the more the rules are different. Well, the rules are the same, but your performance can't be the same, you know?
Right.
And so there were numerous times that I rehearsed, numerous times that I recorded, numerous times that people were giving me feedback, and I had to keep practicing and adjusting and editing, and the process was grueling, but it was rewarding.
Can you give me an example of anything specifically that you did change as you move forward?
Absolutely. One example is I was going to use Murphy's Law as a joke, you know, and so the way the line went is, you know, and life was going okay, but then Murphy showed up. And then I said, you know who Murphy is, the guy from the Law Family. And initially people were laughing, but as you go to an international stage,
yeah,
Murphy's Law is not an international concept. And so as funny as I thought that line was, it was limiting. And so the higher levels I went in the competition, the more people did not relate to the joke as well. And so I had to broaden my perspective and find humor that was more broad and more universal.
Right. And, you know, this is the question I have as well, DC, because When analyzing the different speeches within this competition, I mean, do you want to layer it on with tons of serious material that is meant to inspire? Or, you know, do you want to have a balance with that inspiration coupled with a few jokes here and there?
Oh, humor is absolutely essential. There's a scientific study that says that there are parts in our brain that are the parts of our brain where we're analyzing and critiquing things are lessened when we encounter humor. And so if you notice, people remember what comedians say years and decades later because they're not being as critical or analytical, they're just being open and receptive. So a great speech has humor intertwined in it strategically so that people are able to relax and enjoy the message but still take away the important points. So I definitely mixed it up and we'll do more of that in the future.
Now, DeAndre, I'm sure that you reached out to a few people to hear your speech before taking flight to Vegas. Who are those people that you reached out to, and what sort of feedback did they give you in order to enhance your speech and your delivery?
Well, I went all around the state of Michigan for sure. I was in Frankenmuth. I was in Detroit. I was in Lansing. I was all over. I was in Jackson, and I was just continuing to share the speech. And I got feedback in a round-robin format from people all over the state. Ivan was privileged enough to receive feedback from the guy who won this same title back in 2005. His name is Lance Miller. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, boy, it was 150 people in the room. And when I delivered the speech, Lance delivered the fire and gave me just tons of feedback. And I don't know if you've ever been in that situation where, like, the coach is giving you a new one and you just, you know, make the right direct eye contact and nod your head, say, yes, I get it, I get it. But he was giving me body blows. Those body blows made the speech so much better. And, again, it was coming from a guy who's been there and done that and delivered one of the best Toastmaster speeches or most memorable speeches of all time. And so it was and it was that process that really helped me to grow. And so although I did not win the prize, I'm still a winner because I'm a better version of DeAndre Carter than I was before I left to Vegas. So I'm still a winner in that way.
And I tell you what, DC, anytime you make the semifinals in a competition like this, when we're talking about, you know, 30,000 participants, that's pretty mind-boggling. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with DeAndre Carter, current sports radio contributor, motivational speaker, author, and semifinalist in the Toastmasters International Speech Contest. DC, what do the judges look for, especially when it comes to that level within the competition out in Las Vegas?
The judges have three different categories in which they break down your speech: content, delivery, and language. Content is worth 50 points, delivery is worth 30 points, language is worth 20 points. Within each of those three tiers, they have smaller metrics that they use to measure. And they're measuring everything from the structure of your speech, the rate of your speech, your nonverbals. Every single second matters. You have 5 to 7 minutes to deliver that message. And so they're being very specific in their critique.
You know, DC, they say that public speaking is the number one fear amongst human beings here on Earth. For you, when doing, you know, this and going out and giving speeches, I mean, it is what you do. I mean, you're a motivational speaker, for goodness sake. But did you ever get nervous?
That was an interesting question. People kept asking me when I was still in Michigan before I made the flight to Vegas, are you nervous? And I looked at them like they were crazy. I was like, no, I'm still preparing. I'm nervous in practice. I'm in trouble. I don't know if I belong in this thing. And I did, of course, we're on a sports talk show, so this is a perfect analogy. I compared to athletes. You don't get nervous while you're preparing because you're still focused. You don't get nervous during the game because you're executing. The nervousness comes in that brief moment between where you can no longer prepare, but you can't play yet. So, like, you'll see guys maybe, like, during the national anthem, like, okay, I can't practice anymore, but I can't play, so that you get nervous. You still want to just get out there and do it. But for me, I was uniquely positioned to be the first speaker in my bracket. So I didn't get a chance to, you know, build up any nervousness. I just got a chance to build up my preparation and then go out and release it.
And what about your competitors, DeAndre? Have you ever seen, I mean, throughout the years that you've been participating in Toastmasters, have you ever seen someone just blow it and just totally just go into space and forget, you know, the premise of where they were going with their speech? Have you ever seen things like that in a competition like this? I'm curious.
I've seen things like that, but not in a competition. I've seen it, like, at my normal Toastmasters club. Mm-hmm. We had a guy get up one time, and he was supposed to deliver a 5-minute icebreaker about himself. He got about 5 seconds into it, which is enough time to say his name, and then, boom, everything else went blank. He literally spent 4 minutes and 30 seconds looking at us sheepishly and nervously. And then at the end, he said, that's my time, thank you. Most unique speech I think I've ever seen.
Oh, my God. That's a nightmare in what you guys do.
Yeah, but not the competition. In competition, you're getting the most seasoned speakers. So, you know, it's kind of like they say, you know, the 12th guy in the NBA could go to any gym and run it, you know. And so when you get to that level, even the people who aren't, quote, unquote, the elite of the elite, they're still elite. That's the reason that they're on the ballot. And so everybody that, especially in my round, I was basically like the team cheerleader. I went around hyping everybody up. I knew they were my competitors, but I knew they were also people with purpose, people with destiny, and I want to encourage them. And although I was fully set on being number one among that group, I also wanted to let the group know that I thought that they were good as well.
Yeah, and I'm sure that you made many connections out there as well, DC. Now, I saw on your Facebook page that a man by the name of Muhammad Quintani won the national championship. What separated his speech from the rest?
He was precise with everything. His opening gesture was phenomenal. He grabbed us on the opening second. He's standing there. And he starts his speech not even with words, which is ironic because the name of the speech is The Power of Words. But he started his speech, he pulls out a lighter and a cigarette, and he just looks at everybody, and everybody starts laughing, and he quickly puts it away. And then he says, You know, isn't it funny how people say don't, you know, we should stop smoking because smoking kills. He's like, but if I pulled out a Snickers, you wouldn't have looked at me like that. Yet diabetes kills three times as many people as lung cancer does. And so wow. It grabbed their attention. And then he said, then there's something that kills people even more than both of those things. And he segued it into the power of words and how when you're influential in somebody's life, you can release words and it could really change them. And in some cases, you can kill their dreams. You can even kill their hopes. You can kill their future. So it was just a very well-written speech, a very well-delivered speech. He acted out the different characters in his speech. He is deservedly a world-class speaker, but I'll say this. What captured me the most is in his interview after the speech, he revealed to the audience that he was born a mute. He didn't utter his first word until the age 6. Now he's the world champion of public speaking. I find that amazing.
Talk about inspiration. And I also was reading the article, and he's also an engineer. You know,
isn't that
unbelievable? Because you see, you know, you would think, I mean, for you, DC, I mean, again, this is what you do. I mean, you're a motivational speaker. How many individuals did you come across out in Las Vegas that when you talk about their careers may not even have any ties when it comes to the realm of public speaking? How many people like Muhammad did you run into?
There are quite a few people in different industries. There were teachers. There are different people across various professions. And again, you would assume that some of these people wouldn't be in a speech contest, but that speaks to the testament and the power of Toastmasters International Organization itself, because it's an organization that focuses on developing leaders and helping them to improve their public speaking skills. So if everyone showed up and they're already speakers, how great is the organization? But it's a testament that people show up without the skills and they're elevated in that way.
DC, when do you start, preparing for next year's competition? Does it start now?
It started the second that I found out I wasn't going to compete this year, Ally. And it's not even something I did intentionally. Just unintentionally, my mind already went to what I needed to do, what I would do differently. They say you learn your greatest lessons from your shortcomings when you're a great competitor, and that is what I am. And to borrow from the MSU football theme this year of reaching higher, that's all I thought about the second they did not say my name as the first place winner, because I was in shock. I'm not going to, you know, lie or pretend. Mm-hmm. When they didn't say my name, I was literally in shock. It was like, that's not really happening, right? But I realized that just like the smart said, you have to reach higher. And so I understand that I have to reach higher. But I also understand in order to reach higher, I got to dig deeper. So I'm going to dig deeper within inside myself, dig deeper within inside my resources, dig deeper within inside my ideas. Because I know that if I dig deeper, eventually I'll be able to reach higher.
Great message. DeAndre Carter, current sports radio contributor, motivational speaker, author, and semifinalist in the Toastmasters International Speech Contest. I want to talk about your authorship here, DC, your book, Demand Greatness. What's the update on that?
Our update is phenomenal. We wanted to wait until the Vegas was over so I could put that as the final story in the book. So I have lessons that I learned on the journey of the Toastmasters World Championship that I'm going to put in the middle of the book, because there's a formula in the book that I use as the theme. It says my potential plus my performance equals my possibility. Well, I wanted to focus on the performance part because I was in the middle of using my potential to try to accomplish a possibility of being a world champion. So all the lessons that I learned are going to be wrapped up within chapter 5 of the book, where I talk about what happens when you are giving your ultimate performance, what happens within you and what happens to people around you. These are the lessons that people need, Al, because once you elevate and you grow, not only do you change, but people change how they interact with you. And that's one of the most difficult adjustments that achievers and successful people have to make, is how people respond to the greater and newer version of you that you're becoming. Everybody isn't comfortable with the greater version of you. Some people want you to be, you know, it's kind of like, I'm taking it back, Family Matters, the show Steve Urkel.
Oh, I love
Sometimes
that show.
They want you to go back to being Urkel and you were trying to be Stefan. You're trying to upgrade yourself. And they say, no, we like the old you, like pushing you around. We like it when you weren't your best. And yeah, that's a tough thing to deal with. And so I share all of that.
That's going to be I can't wait to get my hands on this book. So I really like that you're going to add, you know, this experience, you know, going to the Toastmasters, you know, semifinals. I really love that you're going to add that story within the book. And I'm sure you're going to keep us updated on when the finished product comes out. Right, DC?
Oh, absolutely. And the finished product will be out very, very soon. We are taking pre-orders. Keep your eyes out. I can't wait to get this book into people's hands because I firmly believe what I'm about to say, Al. This book, it won't be a matter of if this book will change your life. The question will be how many times this book will change your life.
Wow.
Because I think that your life will be changed multiple times within the book as you go from chapter to chapter, page to page, lesson to lesson.
Man, I just got chills. I just got chills. I'm waiting on you, DC.
Yes, yes.
DeAndre Carter, current sports radio contributor, motivational speaker, author, and, of course, now semifinalist in the Toastmasters International Speech Contest. DC, thanks so much for your time today, my man.
Hey, I appreciate it, Al. Glad to be a part of the show. You guys are like family. I appreciate it.
I cannot wait to get my hands on that book. Let's hit our second break really briefly. When we come back, we'll bring you Top 5 Tuesday, a really quick synopsis on who we believe to be the top 5 quarterbacks in the NFL today. Don't touch that dial. Robert Griffin III. I tell you what, folks. Football players need to be supremely confident in order to have a chance to be successful. However, they don't need to be completely candid about their supreme confidence. Washington quarterback Robert Griffin III has chosen to be completely candid about his supreme confidence, providing the football-following world with more evidence suggesting once again that perhaps Griffin doesn't get it. I don't know. What do you guys think? He says, quote, "I feel like I'm the best quarterback in the league. And I have to go out and show that any athlete at any level, if they concede to someone else, they are not a top competitor. They're not trying to be the best that they can be." Well, Top 5 Tuesday, folks. Who exactly is, or are, I should say, the top 5 quarterbacks in the NFL today? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, folks, again, we only have 1 minute left in the show, so what we're going to do is actually give our top 5, and then we'll table this discussion for tomorrow. You're also going to get my thoughts on Robert Griffin III's comments, which I didn't have a problem with. I love his comments. 5 for me, Peyton Manning. 4, Russell Wilson. 3, Drew Brees. 2, Andrew Luck. And numero uno, Aaron Rodgers. Isaac?
5, Peyton Manning. 4, Roethlisberger. 3, Tom Brady. 2, Andrew Luck. 1, Aaron Rodgers.
All right. We'll debate that on tomorrow's show, but unfortunately, we are out of time. Big thanks to DeAndre Carter, current sports radio contributor, motivational speaker, author, and semifinalist in the Toastmasters World Championship Speech Contest. Thank you to all of you out there for tuning in to today's edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Tuesday, and be easy, people.